The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and careers. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. We are always glad to have you as usual. Today, we're going to always have one of our special guests, Evan Lesser. He is always one of our regulars. He's the president of ClearanceJobs.com. If you have not been to the site, you need to go on the site. ClearanceJobs.com is a site for people who have clearances who are looking for jobs in the federal government, looking for jobs with defense contractors or homeland security contractors or any government contractors. And if you have a clearance all the way from the lowest level clearance, a confidential, all the way from the top secret with the poly and the SCI and all the other kind of good stuff, then it's a good site for you to be on. You've got recruiters on there and everyone else. And we're always glad to have Evan because he's always very, very insightful about what's going on. And he shares a lot of knowledge with what's happening. Evan, hey, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Derek. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you. Hey, talk to us about what's going on. We haven't really talked since the election of President-elect Trump and everything else. What's happening in terms of, and let me kind of start off with that, since the election, what's happening in terms of the defense community, the intelligence community, and everyone else since the president-elect has come into, since he's now going to be the president?
Yeah, it's been exciting, and I think on a day-to-day basis, we're seeing things change pretty quickly. You know, one of the key topics that the president-elect had talked about during the campaign was a federal hiring freeze. So, as you can imagine, federal workers are concerned about that. It should be clarified that the hiring freeze would not be for public safety, DOD, intel agencies, public health positions. It would be just about everything else. But still, that's a lot of people. The federal workforce for civilians is, roughly 2 million people. Contractors still make up the bulk of federal government workers. So I think it's understandable that people have some concerns as to whether that federal hiring freeze is something that could really be pushed through, and if so, when, and really who it might affect. The other thing to keep in mind is, I'm sure if you've been following the news even remotely closely, you've heard that some of the potential heads of certain government agencies are people that don't really have a great history with that agency. In fact, they may have called for it to be dismantled or at least downplayed at some point in the past. And, I speak of, possible incoming education secretary, possible incoming energy secretary. So, it's interesting to look at that, but I think the overall outcome of the potential for a federal hiring freeze and some of the heads of these agencies that have called for their dismissal at some point in the past just has federal workers a bit on edge in this this holiday season.
Just kind of going on that point that you're just mentioning, there is a unique thing going on in terms of people going into different agencies. And sometimes, and I don't know what you're hearing, Evan, off the ground from different maybe federal workers or even contractors, are people worried that these people are coming in to dismantle their agency or kind of radically change it? And also, even with the federal hiring freeze, a lot of the big programs that Trump has talked about requires a lot of government workers and a lot of government contractors. So whether it be, defense or building the wall or homeland security or whatever the case is, it would require a large federal workforce and contractors to support that. So there's these two different messages that's going on, and how do we resolve that?
Yeah, that's an astute point, and I think one of the things that we heard a lot during the campaign season, was that catchphrase "drain the swamp," and I think a lot of people assumed that was geared towards the very top positions within government. But as time moves on, people are starting to wonder, does "drain the swamp" mean me too? Does that mean all levels of government? Is the idea to downsize to downsize government in a significant way. You know, the argument against reducing the federal workforce, whether it's contractor or federal employees, is that sometimes if you're really trying to improve an agency, hiring is one of the easiest things you can do to expand an agency's capabilities. Over the years, depending on the agency you talk about, you know, there's been plenty of cases where there's just not enough people to do a job. We can talk about something like cybersecurity is a great example. Cybersecurity is something that you need hiring for. You need it in all levels of government. You need it in all government agencies. If that's the type of position that would be, you know, removed in terms of draining the swamp or not added to with regards to a federal hiring freeze, you know, you're actually going to get the opposite effect of what some people want, which is really just a more efficient and tuned government. So, you know, I wish I had some crystal ball to prognosticate better, but you know, until we actually get into January and February, I don't think we're going to really know what the full impact of draining the swamp is and who's going to be affected by a federal hiring freeze. But again, I can tell you it's got federal workers and contractors really thinking closely about their job opportunities in the coming year.
Right. You know, you mentioned cybersecurity, and this is kind of, again, another topic when we hear about the Russia and we hear about the hacks and we hear about just this unique situation right now of that we have heard that there's been a real penetration by a foreign country, you know, into the DNC and to maybe certain agencies and other places. But there's also the president-elect who's kind of like, well, we don't know, and everything else. Do we possibly sense that cybersecurity may take a turn in terms of the prioritization of it? Or what are you sensing, Evan, as we kind of hear about what the president-elect is saying?
Yeah, it's really hard to know because I think the key thing that we've really come across in the last really 2 or 3 months from the fall until, you know, the end of the year is that there are varying levels of, I guess, penetration of what a foreign government or a hacker can do within our electoral system. You've got the notion of being able to directly affect individual votes and be able to turn votes from one name to another. You've got something at a slightly higher level, which is influencing a vote through things like breaking into the DNC's email servers or phishing your way into the DNC's email servers and releasing strategic information at key points in order to sway someone's vote. And then at the highest level, you know, you've got the understanding that there are actors that are changing news, editing news, creating their own news, and people believe that. You know, the concept of fake news is nothing new, but I think we've seen a huge amount of it over this election season, and you know, every indication from the intel agencies is that it has had an effect on on voting and on people, and you know, when you get to the point where some of the fake news sits in someone's hands and they get incised about it. Access to firearms, you've got a whole bunch of, logistical and security issues with regards to Department of Homeland Security. So it's a really weird era that we're in. I know a lot of people are feeling like the world is kind of turned upside down.
But without question.
Exactly. With regards to cybersecurity, it's always been a big topic. It's only going to get more big. But I would argue that it's not just about how to protect systems. There are things like fake news and influencing people in other ways that, sits in the digital realm that we do need to address.
Evan, we got to take a quick break. But when we do come back, I want to kind of keep on going with that because, you know, we're looking at a situation, whether it be insider threat, we're looking at a situation with people's background investigations. And again, with the fake news, I mean, we've seen this in D.C. where somebody was influenced by fake news and brought a rifle into a pizza store because of a fake news story about some things that are going on. And he was trying to investigate and we don't know what he was going to do. This seems to be adding on a whole new measure of of and I don't know if this is going to be a whole new era of career for you, where you have to really kind of fight against either propaganda or fight against fake news and really kind of make sure that people understand. And this could also have homeland security implications, like you were saying, where people could send fake news out about an attack or something like that and send resources and people to different areas and it'd be false information. And it seems to be this has opened up a whole new realm. And I want to kind of keep that conversation going when we come back. We're talking to Evan Lesser. He is the president of ClearanceJobs.com. It's a site where basically government agencies, government contractors, and everybody else are putting their jobs on this site. So Evan has a real, real unique pulse about what's going on, always talking to federal workers and federal hiring managers and always talking to government contractors about what their hiring needs are, not only right now, but in the future. If you are a person who has a clearance, if you are a federal agency and needs to hire people, you need to be on the site, clearancejobs.com. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you are just joining us, we have been talking about what's going on in the clearance jobs market, what's going on in the federal hiring market, government workers, government contractors, and what's going on as we look at the year 2017 and look at the new president, President Trump, President-elect Trump, as we look at what's going on with his administration and where are we headed in terms of federal jobs, clearances, security clearances, different threats that are looming in 2017. We're looking at all these things right now. We're talking to Evan Lesser. He is the president of ClearanceJobs.com. It's a great site where you can find jobs in the clearance market. If you've got a clearance, everything from confidential all the way to the highest levels of clearance of top secret, SCI, Poly, need to jump on the site, check it out. A lot of resources, a lot of jobs and everything else. And if you're hiring, also jump on the site as well. Evan, talk to us. You know, we were kind of talking before the break about kind of this new kind of paradigm, this new kind of pattern of instances with fake news and everything. Do you think, I mean, you know, we had the insider threat. I want to kind of talk about that in a second, but we had the whole insider threat movement come after Snowden. Is this going to be a whole new movement of maybe a career field in terms of kind of, misinformation, kind of dealing with misinformation, maybe dealing with propaganda? Are we going to see certain agencies come out of the fold who are going to have responsibility on this?
Yeah, I truly think there is. And you know, you think back to the earliest days of the Department of Homeland Security, and a lot of it was about physical security. How do we protect our airports, our trains? How do we protect certain bits of infrastructure? It was all very physical. And then over the last number of years, it's really moved more towards the digital realm. How do we protect both government servers and information where, things are stored, classified information and non-classified information are stored, but also how does that mesh with industry? You and I have talked in the past about, you know, if Google went down, that would be a huge national security issue because you're talking a gigantic hit to not just services, but also to our financial system, which, you know, Google plays a big part of, and the amount of essential money that changes hands in the U.S. on a daily basis powered by Google is gigantic. So you've got this interesting mix of industry and government and somewhat of a blurry line. Now, when you're talking about something like fake news, it's something that the DHS is really going to have to start to try to figure out because, as you mentioned, if you've got someone with a gun walking into a pizza shop based on a conspiracy theory or fake news, that is a public safety issue. And it's something that was fake news that's, you know, created by some individual to made to look real and works its way into society. But, you know, who controls what gets seen on the internet? You know, this is not Russia. This is not North Korea. We have a free and open system. But, you know, to the same point, DHS and intel agencies and possibly even the DOD have already started working with industry to try to figure out how can we try to put the lid on fake news, but at the same time protecting people's rights for free speech.
Right. You know, as we look at this and kind of look at the evolving nature of, you know, kind of information and information warfare and everything else, what are we seeing as it relates to the insider threat movement? Is that still a major concern in terms of another Snowden? I mean, we've seen other acts of espionage, and also it's moved very much so into our private sector, the Googles and our, you know, our Apples and everything else, where everybody is really, really concerned about intellectual property. If you know, if I look at some of the government reports, they're very, very concerned about that corporate espionage just as much as they're concerned about government espionage. Where is that headed right now, Evan?
So, as you mentioned, you know, the whole insider threat movement really picked up steam after Edward Snowden came to light, understandably so. And since that time period, there have been a huge amount of effort to try to understand insider threat, to be able to figure out how the government is able to watch people with security clearances, to make sure that the access they have to classified information is appropriate for their clearance level and appropriate for their job. You know, we always knew it would be a gigantic task and something that would take many, many years to, you know, to complete. Earlier this year, there was another insider threat issue where, you know, more classified data was removed from premises and disseminated somewhat publicly. So I think to date with the insider threat update, you know, we've seen some programs start. There's been a lot of training. There's been a lot of sharing of best practices, not just within government, but between industry and government. There's been a lot of raising awareness, a lot of briefings. Recent report showed that some of that work has been done in 40 agencies. So in terms of knowledge sharing and information and raising awareness, there's been a whole lot of that. But the actual, you know, movement to, you know, literally monitor what's going on with certain employees and to make sure that they're doing what they should be and are not gathering information that they should not have access to, that's where the government so far has, I wouldn't say fallen short, but they just really haven't even gotten started. So there's plenty of work to do on insider threat, and I think some of the initial work is definitely done, but you know, with Ed Snowden, we've seen it only takes one person with bad intentions to just create a whole world shift in terms of what goes on within government.
And it seems, Evan, that the difficulty of this is, and especially as we're kind of talking about fake news and all this other kind of stuff, is that it's almost you got to kind of figure out somebody's behavior, right? You know, you almost have to kind of figure out what somebody's thinking, and somebody could be digesting, you know, news information that could possibly begin swaying them away from, you know, the federal government or making them think some things. And it may not even be real information, possibly. I mean, or, you know, it could be a number of different things, but it's so difficult to really kind of think about, well, what is a person thinking in terms of, you know, where their mindset is and will they betray the government?
Yeah, correct. And so the government has actually developed what they call an access score. And that access score is supposed to really take a look at an individual worker and make sure that we understand the level of access that they should be granted. So it's a lot more open than a simple security clearance level. The access score is pretty fluid. It can change based on your job requirements, but it is something that we can take a look at a single person and understand how much of a potential threat they could be. But that's just the access they have to information. The next is to take a look at additional monitoring for people that have higher access scores. So the potential for a threat might be higher because they have access to more information. So the government is really, you know, working to try to set up not just a scoring system, but a monitoring system. It's just going to take a while. What you alluded to earlier is this a new you know, possibility for a career? You know, are there new things that need to be put in place? And, you know, I would argue on the technology side, monitoring is something that has been around for a while, but you know, we're talking real time, and we're talking about combining lots of information together to try to figure out where the chief inside threat might be. You know, there are millions of federal employees and contractors, and you can't keep an eye on everybody. And at the same time, you've got unions talking about privacy rights. So there's a lot that needs to be kind of factored in. But yeah, I think that there's easily a whole new kind of genre of expertise where you've got people that are subject matter experts in this type of thing.
You know, Evan, I was just thinking about, with all of this going on, and even kind of think about the emails that have been hacked and all the different servers that have been hacked. Are you seeing behavioral changes or hearing about this kind of people's behavioral changes in terms of kind of what people may send on emails or what people may kind of put on servers these days, or maybe even apprehension to have things on the cloud? Are you just kind of hearing that around the industry and other places, kind of a change in behavior about how much is where and on cloud or servers or everything else or on emails?
Without a doubt. And, you know, if you look at the field of cybersecurity, it really started off as a lot of defensive measures and defensive positions. So how do we protect our system? How do we block attacks and intrusions? And then, you know, a little bit later on down the road, there were new positions that opened up that dealt with emergency response. Okay, fine, we've, you know, had some type of a breach or access. What do we do from here? Who do we alert? How do we shore up the the threat? And further down the road, a little bit more recently, there's been cyber attacks. So if someone has attacked us, how do we go back and try to cripple their system so the intrusions into our system stop? So there's definitely been kind of a few phases of cybersecurity and where it's headed and really where it's going. But I think you're correct in noting that both industry and government is really starting to think more about what information gets out there digitally and what information they share, whether it can be done in person or through some type of an instant messaging system or messages that delete themselves after some time period.
Like a Snapchat?
Exactly. Yeah. But, I mean, the idea for that is actually a pretty good one in the fact that that information, in most cases, is gone forever and can't be hacked.
Right.
So email is really the biggest problem. It's the oldest system, but it's also the most frequently attacked, and it's the most frequently breached just due to the age and the security of the systems. But have I heard about people using less email? Most definitely. I would say within industry, there's been a pretty big push for more sharing to be done over instant messaging. Mm-hmm. The way that instant messaging works is it's definitely more cloud-based. It's harder to penetrate. You're not dealing with information that's being moved in the way that emails are. So there are definitely some interesting things moving at this point, but I would definitely say that both government and industry are talking about new ways to communicate that could be slightly less vulnerable.
We're talking to Evan Lesser. He is the president of ClearanceJobs.com. If you are a person who's a job seeker or you're a person who's hiring and looking for people with clearances, it's a site that you need to go to. He's got a lot of insight about what's going on because he's talking to the hiring managers of federal agencies and government contractors and also talking to the people who are trying to get these jobs and kind of getting the insight of what's happening and going into 2017. We're going to keep this conversation going when we come back. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about a number of good topics, but we've been talking to Evan Lesser. He's the president of ClearanceJobs.com. We've been talking about everything from the new administration, federal hiring freezes, all the way up to what's going on with insider threat. And now we're going to be talking about the National Background Investigation Bureau that's going to be getting started and really kind of, you know, taking forward as we're going to 2017. We're covering all these different issues. ClearanceJobs.com is a site that Evan runs, and it's a site for job seekers, and it's a site for either federal agencies or government contractors to find people who have security clearances. So it's a great site that you should be on if you've got the clearance, or it's a great site to find the people with the clearances. Hey, Hey, Evan, when we think about this and kind of thinking about kind of background investigations, and that was kind of the reason we're talking about insider threat and everything else, because this really kind of goes into the nature of background investigations. So kind of two questions with that. One, there seems to have been a kind of almost a slowdown of investigations, and maybe let's talk about that. But then also with this new bureau, where are they going, and are they going to be kind of, you know, diving in a little bit deeper in order to try to say, listen, we can find maybe behavioral patterns that will prevent us from hiring somebody who will be an insider threat in the future?
Yeah, so the National Background Investigations Bureau launched in October of 2016, and you know, we knew from the very start that there would be a transition period, moving things over from the Federal Investigative Services over to the NBIB, and trying to shift personnel, hiring new contractors, getting new people trained, building the agency infrastructure. So, you know, we knew that there'd be some time delay. I think what has contracting companies a bit spooked is the fact that the backlog of people waiting for clearances, the backlog of people waiting for periodic reinvestigations has really increased. So there's been a few numbers that have come out lately. The first was towards the middle of this year, the estimates were that there were 500,000 people waiting on periodic reinvestigations. As far as the time delay to get a new clearance, there's a recent report that came out on performance.gov and was taking a look at TS clearance investigations. And if you think back to 2013, they actually had recorded that a TS clearance investigation could be done in 80 days, which sounds like a dream at this point. Unfortunately, the Q3 of this year, 2016, it's went from 80 days all the way up to 220 days. And that's just the investigation. It doesn't include the initial time to gather your information for the standard forms, time to complete the forms, time to review and submit the forms, time for adjudication and final clearance award. So 220 days for a top secret clearance is really just part of the entire process. And I think if you take a little bit of a look at the 220 days for a TS clearance number, you know, we always have to remember that as reported by the OPM, that's the fastest 90%. So there are 10% of the TS clearance investigations that are taking way over 220 days. In plenty of cases, we're talking well over a year to get a top secret clearance.
Wow. You know, and with this right now, I mean, because I've talked to different job seekers who are just, you know, waiting. And at one point in time, the clearances were going fast. I mean, it had speeded up and everything else. What's the reason for the delay right now? Was it just the increase of need for clearances, or are we also not having the personnel? I know OPM was trying to, you know, bring in more people. They were trying to bring in more contractors and everything else. Do we not have the personnel that's needed in order to get these clearances done?
So the NBIB has tried to been responding really to speed up the process with a few different factors. The first, as you mentioned, is hiring. So we've always relied on contract investigators, and not too terribly recently, both Keypoint and CACI were brought into the NBIB to augment the investigator workforce. But that takes time, and it takes training. The other main problem that we've seen is essentially the movement of data from the FIS to the NBIB and trying to figure out where are our cases, who's going to be doing what, how are we going to distribute these. That's part of the kind of the typical red tape that you'd see from a transition from one agency to another. As you alluded to earlier, with social media, investigators are now allowed to utilize social media to corroborate information that a candidate that they're talking to may have and may talk about, and that adds to the process. It's another thing that investigators have to take a look at. They want to take a look at it. They know they can do their jobs better by looking through social media, but it does take time. So I think the last factor is, you know, towards the beginning of 2015, There were definitely instances where certain investigators were being rushed through the process. They were producing sub-quality, substandard work, and definitely people slipped through the cracks in terms of the clearance process that probably either shouldn't have had a clearance or, you know, their investigation would have turned out a little bit differently than it did. So I think companies like Keypoint and Khaki are definitely kind of been put on notice, and they know that they need to produce high-quality investigations, but also do so in a timely manner to try to reduce this this backlog and to try to get from 220 days in Q3 2016 down to a more reasonable number.
You know, when we think about this and kind of think about the nature of the investigations, and two questions with that, Evan. One, is technology going to continue to evolve a lot more in terms of background investigations? I know there was kind of always a kind of conversation about how much technology are we using, or can an investigator, you know, have to travel certain places, or can they get the information, you know, off databases and everything else? Is the technology getting better and better to look into somebody, even with social media and social intelligence gathering? And then two, with all of that, will we continue to see that this workforce is going to grow? We've got, you know, now a new administration coming in. They got to bring in about 4,000 people, probably a good half of that going to require clearances. So we've got a whole new group on top of that who are going to need security clearances in addition to certain things. And then also with the federal hiring freeze, are we talking about, you know, freezes possibly with background investigators?
That's a great question. Yeah, that's a great question. There's definitely a few areas there. Perhaps the first thing to take a look at is, you know, the 4,000 or so incoming people into a new administration that require clearance. They're definitely prioritized. So what that means for industry and for anyone who's waiting for their clearance is that they may experience some additional delays while those 4,000 are taken care of. You know, 4,000 is actually a fairly small number considering the hundreds of thousands of people that are currently in process for clearance, or the many hundreds of thousands of people who are waiting for a periodic reinvestigation. So that may slow down the process a little bit. As far as technology goes, you know, there's been a lot of testing over the last couple of years to try to figure out how can we empower investigators in the field, how much information can we obtain digitally by someone sitting at a desk rather than having to go out and talk to people. And, you know, without a doubt, it's a balancing act. And I don't think that there's a clear formula for what that might look like. The OPM previously and now the MBIB are always trying to balance quality over quantity. And to be fair, that is something that is really difficult, because if it moves too much in one direction, you have end results like falsified investigations or end results like Edward Snowden, and it's tough. So I don't think the government quite has a handle on what that balance is, and it may have to actually be fluid and shift over time based on the number of people that are waiting for their background investigation to complete. What I can say is that the government has been fairly open and flexible, noting that there have been delays, and the delays could be due to a new administration coming in. They could be delays that result from transitions. There could be funding problems, which we've had in the past. One of the new memorandums that came out very recently, it was essentially saying that if you have a security clearance and your investigation is out of date, in other words, you're waiting for a periodic reinvestigation. It hasn't happened yet. It's going to happen at some point in the future, but it is now out of date. The memorandum says that you can still keep your job. You can still have access to classified information. You can still, you know, step into the buildings where you need to do work. And that is something that is a huge kind of sigh of relief, because you'd be looking at, you know, upwards of 500,000 people that were suddenly not able to set foot in the door of their workplace if, you know, their background investigation was out of date. So that is something good to hear. I did confer with William Henderson. He literally wrote the book on security clearances. He works for a company called FedCAS. But it was good to understand that cleared workers who are waiting for a periodic reinvestigation and could be waiting for, you know, upwards of a year plus are not going to lose their access.
We're talking to Evan Lesser. He's the president of ClearanceJobs.com. We've been talking about a lot of different stuff, and we're going to go take a real quick break because we got so much more we want to cover with Evan, and then talking about security clearances, talking about the National Background Investigation Bureau, talking about insider threats, cybersecurity, the federal hiring freeze, and then what's going on. What a couple more topics we want to discuss with him before we got to let him go. And we'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about a lot of great topics. So if you missed the first part of this show, you got to go back. We're talking to Evan Lesser. He is our regular guest on Fed Access and always glad to have him. He's the president of ClearanceJobs.com, a great site. If you got a clearance, jump on there, look for jobs in the federal government or government contractors. And if you're an agency or a contractor hiring, make sure you jump on there because you can find some great candidates on there, a lot of good resources. Hey, Evan, want to talk to you about a couple of different things, especially from the job seeker standpoint. Two different things. One, social media, and we've talked about this before, but, you know, it just seems as if, you know, even with the insider threat and just also with Russia and other people just really, really kind of being cyber savvy and grabbing onto information. Are we still seeing that as a high level threat scenario with people, whether it be on LinkedIn or social media, Facebook pages or other things like that? And then also, do you advise people who are in agencies or other things like that? Do they really need to start a behavioral shift on, you know, whether it be what they send through emails or, you know, their language? Everything seems to be under scrutiny right now. What are you recommending to people who are out there looking for jobs and you know, or you know, kind of going through that whole market?
Well, you know, when you think about this, you talk about people and how open they should be if they're a federal worker or a federal contractor, how much information of themselves should be out there online. It's almost like talking to a teenager. You say that whatever gets on the web can stay on the web, even if you delete it. And you know, I think with that being the case, and with data breaches being a daily occurrence now, and people's information getting disseminated all over the web. Thinking back to the OPM breach of 2015 and the fact that millions, 20-plus million people that even applied for security clearance or have a security clearance, their information is now out there. You know, yeah, you definitely have to be more careful. You have to pay attention to security controls. There are enough people out there that if someone is trying to access information, trying to find someone who can give them classified information. If yours is more protected, they're going to move on to someone else. So it is really important to keep your information as secure as possible, to know which sites you are getting onto, understand their privacy policies and security measures, keep as much data off LinkedIn as possible, really understand where the threats are, and they're really for the more public places like LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. It's an evolving thing, but it really behooves a federal worker or a federal contractor to keep tabs on it and not just kind of sit back and hope that these companies are going to protect their data. You've got to take a step forward and be proactive and really understand what information you're getting out there on the web, because without a doubt, at some point it can come back to you.
And Evan, as we look at this, and another piece, I've been hearing that, you know, that some and this could come from China, Russia, but some people are developing apps that you think are just kind of very, very, you know, innocent apps, games or browsers or whatever. But these apps are actually collecting information and sending them back. I mean, do we also have to now start really becoming a lot more educated about what apps we're having on our phone or other things of that sort? In order to make sure we protect ourselves?
Yeah, definitely. There have been more than a number of cases where a user's phone or laptop computer, the cameras are actually recording information, you know, visually of what's going on without the person noting. It's a very low-tech solution, but a lot of people put tape over their cameras on their computers. You know, there was a recent picture that came out this past summer, I believe, of Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook and his laptop, and he's got a piece of tape over the camera. you know, you do have to be careful, and you do have to know that, you know, you're going to be touching thousands of websites, of apps, of software, of programs, of plugins, messages, and you do have to be careful, especially if you're a federal worker or a federal contractor, because, you know, the government, as time goes on, is taking a closer and closer look at what you do in the digital world as a federal worker or contractor, the security clearance that you hold, and if you are making yourself open or vulnerable or a target to coercion. And, you know, everybody has done and said things they regret in the past, but when you do it in the digital realm, it exists forever.
Right.
And if someone wanted to use that against you for national security information, they surely could.
You know, when we think about this and kind of going into what you guys are doing, what's Clearance Job doing? I know you give a lot of advice on the site, but what new things you have going on that's really kind of helping, you know, job seekers and also helping hire the right people?
So what's interesting directly in the clearance jobs market is, you know, we are surely into a time period where the candidates have the power.
Mm.
And it's changed over the years. It kind of ebbs and flows. But at this point right now, you know, there are roughly, 3.4 million people with security clearance. Only a fraction of those people are career-minded and are interested in hearing about job opportunities. And a small fraction of those people are actually actively looking for a new job. So, you know, we call those people passive candidates. They have a job. They're okay with it. They're okay with hearing from employers, but they're not going to be nearly as responsive as an active job seeker who's really wanting to get into a new position. So the industry has changed over the last year or so in that there are far more open positions than there are available candidates. And that puts the benefit into the candidates' hands. Candidates are able to ask for higher compensation. They're able to switch between employers in very short time periods. We've seen some people move between companies in as little as 6 months, and the other employers really can't blink an eye at it because there are so few people. So candidates are in control in this marketplace. There are very few active job seekers. When you get into some specialty positions like engineering or cybersecurity, the number of available active job-seeking candidates dwindles into, you know, far less than 100. So the marketplace is weird, and it's definitely changed. A few years ago, there were a lot of available candidates. The number of jobs out there was plentiful, but the balance between candidates and jobs was healthy. Now it's dramatically shifted. Far too many open jobs compared to the number of available candidates, and that's really kind of set the HR teams and recruiting and sourcing teams on edge.
You know, as and just a real quick second, the last little piece in terms of a job seeker jumping on Clearance Jobs, are you still very, very focused in on the in-depth resumes right now in terms of really people describing what they have done?
Yeah, we are, and I think for a lot of companies, they're far less scrutinous, I should say, of a candidate than they were in the past.
Okay.
In the past, you know, they would really take a very close look at candidates and really spend time looking through the resume. These days, if they can find someone with a general skill set, seems to have a good head on their shoulders and has the right clearance, they're going to be considered for a position.
They'll take a chance on them. We've been talking to Evan Lesser, always insightful. I wanted to make sure candidates understood what the market's looking like. So it looks like 2017 may be a good market. We'll have to see if there, hopefully there's no federal hiring freeze, and we'll have to hopefully kind of see if this 2017 continues to be a year for the candidate. We'll always have Evan Lesser back as we go deeper and deeper, especially as we learn a little bit more about what this administration is going to do a little bit later on in the year. Thank you so much, Evan.
Thanks, Derek.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.